This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It's one thing to have a defense strategy. It's another thing to watch that strategy crash and burn in real time. Brian Koberger's legal team has spent months throwing everything that they possibly could at the wall, trying to get evidence thrown out, trying to dismiss the indictment, trying to poke holes in the prosecution's case. And now, every single motion, every one of them, has been denied. So what does a defense team do when the evidence isn't going anywhere, when the judge has shut down every single attempt to suppress it? They pivot. They try to reshape the narrative, shift focus to jury selection, media influence, and behavioral arguments to create doubt where hard evidence already exists. That brings us to our guest, FBI Special Agent, retired FBI Special Agent Robin Drake. Robin, given your expertise in behavioral analysis and counterintelligence, I have to ask, at this point, does this case look like a defense team trying to construct a real alternative explanation, or does it feel like they're just using basically psychological manipulation to cloud the potential jury's perception out there?
I'm sorry for my big smile, Tony. I'm not more excited than I haven't been in a long time. It's so wrong to celebrate such a tragic case, but I am so relieved that he didn't throw out anything.
Yeah.
So the only thing she's left with, because we've talked about this on this show so much. I was worried last week. Mm-hmm. I was really, really worried that, you know, she had some decent arguments in there. about admissibility of the DNA evidence and the other potential people, DNA popping up with blood. I mean, there's some issues in there that I was concerned about. But this week, I just feel like this big weight has been lifted off prosecution's back, off of our back, and most importantly, off the victims' backs. Because as you're eloquently just saying, all she's got left, I think, is beyond reasonable doubt.
And I think that's all. Yeah, I don't know where else they're going to go with this because they can't. I mean, their primary argument outside of, I mean, in court, but outside of the actual trial has been the DNA was gathered unethically or illegally, and that's not the case at all, which basically would have thrown everything out. Because if you didn't get that thrown out, then all the steps it took after that would have gone away as well. So they really have nothing. And they can't make that argument when the trial starts. They can't go, well, we don't think that this was done correctly. They can't. That's already been decided by the court. It was done correctly. Now you have to judge it on its merits, and you have to argue the merits of the case, and you have to argue something like DNA, something that doesn't really lie all that much. That's pretty sound. Touch DNA, very sound. I don't know how you argue this other than you're going to have to try and come up with some reason why Brian Koberger's DNA was on a knife sheath at a murder scene.
Yeah, I think all she's going to have left is the argument of potentially other people, the lack of accuracy of cell phone data tracking. I mean, she's just going to do the best she can poking holes in some of the gaps that still are there to, again, create some beyond reasonable doubt. That's it. That's literally all they got left because this is such a forensically solid case because of that DNA touch DNA. And it all kind of flows downhill from there. And he did a few things wrong as well when it came to his cell phone data and establishing patterns that I think we'll get into that is not going to help him in any way whatsoever either.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal because the cell phone triangulation data is another big part of this case. They claim that he had gone around the house about 12 times in the month leading up to the actual murders. And people are looking at it as surveilling, as stalking. And cell phone tower data, the way it pings, it's not that large of a footprint that each tower really has. And I don't think a lot of people realize this. This doesn't go on like 20, 30 miles. They're a couple miles each. I mean, give or take a bit as far as what each tower can cover. That's how it pings. That's why they're everywhere. And that's why you can really get a good idea of where someone is coming and going from. Plus, there's going to be GPS data likely on his phone as well that we don't know anything about yet. That we'll see how that comes out. But why don't you speak to that? Some of the other flaws and some of the mistakes that he made with his cell phone that are not going to play well for him once he's facing a jury.
So what he did here with his cell phone is kind of what he did wrong also in trying to bag his trash when he got home. He didn't establish a pattern of behavior over a period of time because you and I talk all the time about life and behavior arcs. So what he did wrongly, which is helping prosecution on his cell phone, if he had been smarter, if he had had reps and he had had some education plus experience, which makes that wisdom, and horribly so in this case it would have been, he would have never had his cell phone on as he was stalking. He would never have had it with him, and he would have had a pattern of behavior for at least 6 to 12 months ahead of time of that being out of the picture. So that, in other words, the night in question, it was just another night. So that way, as he was giving his alibi of my alibi was I was looking at stars, it fit a pattern of behavior. I'm always out looking at stars. I'm always doing these things. Look at my pattern of behavior for the last year or two of me. But what he did was he was ping, 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 night of murder, cell phone off.
Yeah.
That shows a pattern of behavior that he was in other words, there's no coincidences in law enforcement or in leads or in evidence. It just is what it is. It screams at you. And then when you put that with the same kind of one-off ping, again, as a behaviorist, you're looking at, all right, so night of murder, cell phone's off. We go to arrest them, and all of a sudden trash is being bagged and put in the neighbor's trash the night that we're arresting him. See what I mean? It was he was thinking here, and if he had been luckily he didn't have the wisdom, he would have been thinking larger and out here for patterns of behavior.
And that is something that I find interesting, that he didn't think that way, but I'm not that surprised. I think that sort of thinking comes more, I mean, with life, honestly, and more reps of, oh, you do have to think out here, because when you're that young, you sometimes do just kind of think right here, because that's what life has been for you. And I think that is a fatal flaw, is this youth in some of this. And the fact that that data is out there, that shows us, okay, this is where he was. We got that. We got the DNA. We got the Elantra, which was seen on camera around the vicinity, the same kind of mark on the front of the vehicle, the exact same one that they ended up pulling over as he was going out to Pullman, Washington. There's a lot here that's going to be presented at the trial. What other weaknesses does the prosecution have in this in terms of the defense being able to poke some holes and show reasonable doubt?
Again, what they don't have is they don't have a murder weapon. They don't have blood on him or his vehicle. I mean, so there's a lot of forensic things. As much as it's great we have that one touch DNA, there's a lot that we don't have on prosecution. And so that's the holes are going to be poking at it, which are going to be poking a reasonable doubt. So I think part of the challenge of prosecution on this is going to be the level that they're going to have to get to for a jury emotionally for death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think is the challenge and the hurdle. But again, it's pretty solid. So it's going to come down to jury instructions. It's going to come down to how the judge is managing, you know, the courtroom and managing the jurists and managing prosecution and defense. But I'm right now I'm feeling pretty confident for prosecution. Whereas last week I was, we'll see.
Yeah. You just didn't know. I mean, it's not that the science was bad or anything. It was just how are they going to interpret, the gathering of the data of
it was legalese. Doesn't change what was gathered. Mm-mm. And how good it is and how damning it is. It was how legally it was going to be able to be submitted or not. And luckily the judge ruled that, yeah, it's all good.
And that's going to be a problem for them, because they don't get to argue that this time. They're going to have to be arguing, how did it get there? Or they may throw the Hail Mary and try to get somebody in there that's going to try and cloud the jury's mind on the legitimacy of the data itself. I just don't know how far that can go until we go into territory of just, you know, junk science.
Well, it's going to come down to credibility of who she puts on that stand as expert witnesses, as I think it's going to come down to expert witnesses for her. And you know, I wouldn't put a buyer. I mean, she is really, really good at her job, and we've seen that and said it throughout this entire case so far. She's good at what she does, and she's going to throw everything she has at this. And so here's what I think is really good for everyone involved. And that is, at the end of the day, whatever the outcome, if he's found guilty, you know he's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's going to do everything possible to make it that he's not. So whatever comes to be, I think people hopefully will be satisfied.
This is way too early to predict, and it will probably very much depend on how the trial plays out. But I am starting to wonder, will he end up having to take the stand, because they're in such a corner here? I mean, unless something else dramatically happens, which not saying it couldn't, but I am wondering if this is a guy that they're going to risk putting on the stand, just considering his demeanor of what we know and have seen thus far, of just not playing well to an audience when he opens his mouth.
Yeah, I agree. That's going to be a big, interesting piece as well. I'm guessing, on any other case, I'd say definitely not, because again, he doesn't, from what we know about him, from what we see in him in the courtroom, and from what we've read in you know, Bloom's amazing book on the family and him in general, doesn't have and also classmates in college with him. You know, he doesn't have a real high likability factor. And that's what, you know, defense attorneys love or hate, is when your client has high likability and it's going to sway a jury, you know, emotionally. I don't think he has the ability to sway anyone his side emotionally. So I'm guessing probably not.
I'm wondering, you know, you get him on the stand, like, why did you turn your phone off? Why would it be off from that period to this period? What's your answer other than battery went dead or something. But that can be checked as well. And I believe it was not a battery that went dead, because that can be confirmed. So it was turned off. It was turned off.
So the problem here, Tony, too, it's not the facts that he'd be answering to.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually his emotional connection to the information he's providing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw this with the Alec Murdaugh case. The fake tears, the blubbering on cue. It looked like he was reading from a script. And as much as I think Alex Murdaugh is a horrendous psychopath as well for what he did to his wife and son, I think from what we understand, again, not a clinical psychologist or licensed in any way, but from what we are seeing, observing, the potentiality of Koberger being less emotionally connected to human beings is much higher than even Alec Murdaugh.
So I agree.
I think Koberger's ability to elicit emotion from people is going to be low.
I think he could probably play fairly well with Ann Taylor and softballs, but I think on cross, you trigger that guy and it's game over. It's just like, oh, now we see who you really are. And I think, he seems like a very triggerable person.
You make a really good point there too, is that he definitely comes across as a guy, if you get him feeling insecure and defensive, that mouth is going to start running potentially.
Yeah.
Because it looks like from reports, that's what's gotten him in trouble with his university in the past as well. So, Ann Taylor, I think, does her best when she puts her hand on his shoulder or his arms to try to, make it feel like people that are watching that, she's emotionally connected to him.
Yeah. I wonder how much Purell and how many showers she takes right after those hearings, which she has to be close to him.
my humble opinion, I'm excited about this case because I think the families will hopefully be able to move on after it.
I hope so. And this judge is not taking any crap and not seem to go down a lot of weird roads with this. It's like, nope, here's the facts. Let's get on with this and let's get some justice. And there's obviously other big pieces to this case beyond just the touch DNA. We're taking a look now at they have been looking at the triangulation of the cell phone data, and a lot of that does point to him going in and around the house several times prior to the actual murders. They believe he went by the house right after the murders in the morning. And that's just some of the few pieces we know on this very, very sealed up case. They went in, they took all of his digital devices. I'm sure, examined all of them as deeply as they can possibly get. That information still has not been put out there. We don't know what they found, and I'm sure we'll find that out at trial. I'm going to think they probably found some stuff. I have no idea. That's what we still have to find out. But, I mean, that would be very interesting. Would you be shocked if there's nothing on any of his devices that point to anything to do with this case?
Yeah, I don't think there will be.
Really?
I think he's pretty thorough because the leakage we're getting, matter of fact, one of the things they also brought up during the interview with Howard was how disappointed he was that the prosecution didn't have pushback on any of these things Ann Taylor was claiming.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of let it ride, and there was still nothing new that came out. So she's poking a lot of holes in the cell phone theory stuff too, just because of how small that town is and how the cell phone data could be there or it could be 10 miles away. That's what they're saying. So again, and he is a, and what's interesting about this, he is an all in, it was definitely Koberger guy, and no doubt in his mind, but he is seeing what Ann Taylor is doing to poke all the holes in it as she can. And what it looks like is she is, again, my conjecture, she's capitalizing on what he did to intentionally mislead people, and she's doing a really good job of it. The tiny attorney client privilege on this would be interesting to listen to, wouldn't it? Because I wonder what he's leading her to based on what his knowledge of the scene was. That'd be fascinating.
That would be very fascinating to hear what exactly that'll be. One of those things where it'll come out on cassette tapes later and we'll all be dead and our kids will hear it.
I just got my fingers crossed, Tony, that it doesn't go south on us because these four beautiful young kids that were murdered bloodlessly. I mean, bloodless with a lot of violence, a lot of rage, mm-hmm. meaninglessly.
Yeah.
All to satisfy some moron that was trying to get off.
His mental health records, Brian Koberger's mental health yep. records, have now been also turned over to the prosecution on this. You know, from a standpoint of, you know, behavioral analysis, what do you think the prosecution is looking for on this? And you know, what could they use in their case? And let's also throw it on the other side. And what could the defense use on their case? I mean, obviously, depending on what's in those records.
In my opinion, again, not knowing legally what they can use or not use, I actually think that helps prosecution, because from what we've even seen in leakage in social media with the postings he was doing at an earlier age, as a teenager, all the challenges he's had throughout his life, he's got an arc of behavior that says it was escalating to something like this potentially. Because not all crazy broken brains do this, but all people that do this have a crazy broken brain and a life arc to get there. And so he's got a lot of telltale signs from what we've heard, at least in social media, that would lead them to see that. So having prosecution access to those mental health records, I think, is going to help prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily make a killer by any means if somebody had trouble in life and have some mental health problems. Obviously, you know, I think everybody does to a certain extent, but obviously not everyone goes and kills people on that. So I'm wondering how far back those records are going to make much of a difference in this case. Are we going to go all the way back to the teen years where he was writing online allegedly about the visual snow and feeling disconnected emotionally from his loved ones and not knowing what to do or feel about that? I mean, that's a kind of a big one, I would think, in terms of showing lack of empathy or lack of feeling. And also all the people that he's interacted with, there was complaints. There was a lot of issues from a lot of former students and coworkers of this guy's just, there's something missing here. He's off. He's very cold. He doesn't seem to actually connect on a human level. But again, how do you take that into court, and how do you argue that to show that this is also the character of a killer?
So those are a couple different things, I think. I think the testimony of people in his life is going to be different than the health records. Mm-hmm. Health records, I think, is just going to go back to whenever he was first professionally seen by someone for whatever he's dealing with, and potentially also dealing with a drug addiction as well, whether he got professional help for that as well in recovery. Again, I don't know what's going to be admissible or not admissible, but I think those things are actually the ones leading towards that life arc. Yeah, from what I've, because again, reading the book on him and his family and his dad, I mean, there's a lot of caring in this family about trying to help him throughout his life. And so when you try to help someone, there's a lot of records of people trying to help someone. So he wasn't someone that was cast out by his family at mm-hmm. all. And so it's heartbreaking as a parent to look at what, as much effort as his dad put in to save him, didn't work out that well. Obviously. But I think there's going to be a lot of records for it.
I mean, very much, yeah. Like it's a broken brain. If in fact this is him that did do this, with having all those people, you know, feeling that way about him. Obviously, the investigators came in, they caught him packaging up his stuff into baggies and trying to put it into the neighbor's trash. We still don't really know exactly what was in those baggies. What was he trying to package up? Why was he trying to put it into the trash? There's so many unknowns here in this case that we still do not know about. What are some of the pieces that you're most curious about once this reaches trial that you want some answers to, that I'm sure the investigators have, and I'm sure it's out there in discovery this way or that way, but what are some of those pieces to you that you think could really make or break this?
So definitely what was in those trash baggies, obviously. And outside of what we were already seeing, typical behaviors of someone that does something like this, there was a certain amount of stalking that takes place. You know, you have to actually do surveillance. They're going to be obsessing. They're going to be, you know, and, you know, he's a student. Students don't do things without notes, and so I would be really, really interested to see in what we don't know yet, as you're saying, and that's a digital footprint angle. You know, he might have done a good job of covering his tracks, but at some point I would have thought that he would have taken notes, he would have journaled, he would have done something on this path. And so hopefully that we're going to see that when it comes to trial.
That's what I'm wondering about the most, is that the notes, digital footprint, and things of that nature. I know you said you think we're not going to find anything. I don't know. I wonder about that, again, because of just minds like this. And the what I'm thinking of right now would be the allegations against Rex Huerman. I mean, he literally had notes of, like, and it was the silliest things, too. I can't think of them specifically off the top of my head, but it was like, wash hands, just like basic things. Where, right. Like, why do you need a note on like, this is the step you need to take, you know, after this? And I'm wondering if we're going to find something like that here.
So it's a great comparison. Rex Huerman also had a lifetime of complacency, because he got really used to his lifestyle, and he acclimated his entire family to that lifestyle, and so it became part of their normal. And you get really, really lazy when you're living in normal. If this was Koberger, this is his most likely his first murder. hopefully, and that this was, and he had a lot more attention to detail because he was a student of this, and Huerman was just a practitioner of this. Mm-hmm. And also, though, the reason why I say that we have a probability of not having what we're hoping to find, which he definitely would have done, taking notes, having detailed plans, you know, he would have had to have had that to do what he did, but we still don't have blood, his blood on anything. We can't find clothes, no murder weapon. In other words, he was really, 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 really good at covering his own DNA tracks on from the crime scene itself. He probably would have done the same thing on his digital footprint, I would think.
My conjecture on that, though, is this. You can go into your Facebook account, Instagram, whatever it was that maybe he was using, if in fact he was stalking the girls or looking at them or whatever. And yeah, you can delete your own history. You can delete messages. You can do that. And it deletes it, you know, from your device. It deletes it from what you're able to then access on your cloud. But I mean, they got subpoenas into these companies where they can go back and look further than that. The data, I'm very much guessing, could still be there, even if he thought he wiped it correctly. But it's, you know, it once it's on the cloud, it's out there with these companies, the info is still there. And if you really, really need it, there's ways of getting it through court orders.
Yes, if you know which ones to look for.
True.
If he purchased burner phones and cloned accounts for everything he was, in other words, he would have, if he had, was planning this for a long time in advance, and he bought a burner everything to do all this on, and then disposed of it in fictitious names, it'd be much harder to track down. The only way you could do that, again, I'm not on the tech side of this, would be you'd be looking for cell pings and Wi-Fi connectivity in his apartment that wasn't necessarily linked to his overt accounts. You'd be looking for the covert black accounts. Mm-hmm. Much more challenging for investigators. Again, we're way out there on the conjecture side. But if Howard Bloom is correct in his thoughts and opinions on this, you know, I wouldn't put it by him to do it to that level and extent. I mean, you know, criminals using burner phones, it's pretty common.
Sure.
And could he have used that kind of methodology to do his planning? Yeah, very much so. So we'll see.
Yeah, what was he doing?
I
was
hope
he
not.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, one would assume if you're stalking someone, you wouldn't be using your name. You wouldn't be on your own account. I would think you'd probably have some sort of fake account going on there. And then it would be very difficult to trace that back, because there's millions of accounts created every single day on these platforms by bots and such, where, you know, they go into the ether. It'd be almost impossible to find, you know, maybe who
and,
or what.
And also, Tony, I'm sorry to interrupt, you know, and also, and so let's go back also to think about him as a PhD student in criminology. You know, he studied how people were caught,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so this was a very common way that people got caught. And so it looked like, and that's why my initial thing when I saw him in a courtroom in his initial statements, where he was surprised he was caught, because being a student of people that got caught, he would do all these things to prevent him from being caught by those same methodologies. Him knowing in advance that, hey, people like me keep notes, they journal, and they stalk people, I got to cover my tracks from doing that, so I'll need to do X, Y, and Z. People get caught because they leave blood traces, you know, in their vehicles and all these things, you know, and the murder weapon, all these things. So I need to cover my tracks there. So
do you think he was that smart, or do you think he just got really, really lucky? And now these little pieces are coming up and Ann Taylor's going, look at this. And he'd be like, yes, that could totally be something, too. I mean, it I don't know. I'm wondering if he is truly as wise as we're giving him credit for.
Wise is a combination of education and experience. That's mm-hmm. wisdom. I don't think he has any wisdom whatsoever. He's a broken brain moron. But he did have academic background, and so I think he was academically trying to cover his tracks. And let's see where it falls apart, because obviously it fell apart with an ice sheaf.
Mm-hmm.
Where it didn't fall apart, again, and this is what Howard was saying, nonstop was about him covering the tracks with both the murder weapon, the coveralls that he purchased at a store, I think it was on Amazon, and then having no blood traces anywhere on feet, on shoes, outside. I mean, and how did he do that? Where did he do that? I mean, that was the amount of pre-thought and pre-planning was really extreme. I've never heard of it in another case where it was like that clean. It was that sterile that they couldn't. I mean, they said they tore that car. They tore apart the gas tank. They tore apart the brake lines.
Mm-hmm.
For him just pushing on the brake in the car. I mean, they tore that car completely apart to find something and found nothing. That was how. I mean, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good question just in itself of whoever did this. How did anyone get out of that bloody of a crime scene that you'd have to be that intimate with people on, meaning that close to be doing this stabbing and to not have anything on you and to not leave a trace of leaving? Yeah. I mean, anybody, like, there's just not, it's like no one came in some ways where it happened, but there's no evidence of necessarily someone coming in or leaving anything going out. That to me is also baffling. Take Koberger out of the equation. Whoever did that, like, that's somebody had some skills there, or again, insanely lucky. I don't know.
Yeah, unless he used even a different vehicle. It's the only thing I thought of as well. And they're looking at analyzing his route that he took. He also Snake River, one of the rivers he drove by, could have dumped stuff in there. But they've been, law enforcement scouring the rivers. They've been scouring the entire area. Howard had a theory of maybe they put it up. Maybe he hit up instead of everyone's looking down on the earth for mm-hmm. it. Maybe he put it up in a tree. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy conjecture on what he could have done to hide the most telling part of any crime is that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what's completely missing from this.
Yeah. So many questions. And we have a long ways to go before this hits the courtroom. And I think anything is still possible. It's one thing to walk into court knowing you've got a tough case. It's another to watch every single legal strategy you've planned get shut down before trial even begins. That's exactly where Brian Koberger's defense team is right now. Motions to suppress? Denied. Motions to dismiss the indictment? Denied. Motion to take the death penalty off the table? Also denied. At this point, their legal playbook is looking thinner than, an airline napkin or the now non-existent SkyMall. So with every major piece of evidence locked in and the prosecution not missing a single legal step, what does a defense attorney even do at this point? How do you create doubt when the jury is going to hear about the DNA, phone data, and surveillance footage tying your client to the crime? Bob Mata, defense attorney, joining us to discuss all of this and the latest events here in the Brian Koberger case. Bob, you've defended tough cases. When you're sitting in Koberger's defense chair right now, looking at the stack of admissible evidence and a death-qualified jury and no prosecutorial wins, what is your next move?
Defend the case.
Yeah.
Look, is a defense, you lose motions to suppress way more frequently than you win them. So Ann Taylor was not surprised. You know, I think that she probably thought that she put forth some good motions, had some valid arguments. You know, if down the road they believe that the judge ruled improperly on the law, then, you know, it gets taken up on appeal if he's convicted. So, you know, if you're Ann Taylor and you're like, all right, like you're assuming you're going to lose him. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying.
Sure,
you're not thinking that you're going into the case where you've stripped the state from all the evidence.
No,
you know, you're going into that case. You're making your record. You're filing the required requisite motions to suppress to preserve those issues for appeal. And you know, those, like I said, will come down the pike, down the road sometime. Mm-hmm. Like I've been on the record that I think that the IGG. Aspect of this, if Koberger is convicted, is going to be an issue that's going to make its way up to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Because we need the big court, the high court, to sound off on it.
We need a definition. Yeah.
We do, and we need parameters. We need to know from the highest court in the land, where it becomes the law of the land, what the cops need to do in order to be able to use that. You know, because they like to just call it, you know, it's a tip. You know, it's a tool. It's more than that, you know, and the fact that you share DNA with your relatives, because right now where it stands with that stuff, and I know I've gone a little far afield from your question, but, you know, where it stands right now in the law is that you don't even have standing in terms of being able to attack it if they've gotten a match from a distant relative's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Because you share that DNA, they're like, oh, well, you know, this is a cousin fifth removed from you, but we're able to make the family tree and it leads back to you. So we got to you. You don't have the standing to challenge that at this point, because it's not your DNA per se, even though you share the DNA. So that's to me where the real argument's going to lie, because it's well settled that, Tony, if you went into, say, a restaurant and you had a nice glass of iced tea, and, you know, you had your mouth all over it and your hands all over it, and you left that restaurant and the feds are sitting on that restaurant or law enforcement's at that restaurant. After you dip out, they creep in there and say, hey, we're going to need to take that glass. They drop it into you've abandoned that DNA. So mm-hmm. You no longer have a privacy interest in it. It's not the same thing with DNA. That is not the equivalent of DNA. DNA, you're not abandoning it. You know, it's not a thing. Like if you share your DNA with a distant relative, I think personally that there's a privacy interest in that. And I'm not suggesting that law enforcement not be able to use it anymore. What I'm suggesting is go get a goddamn warrant.
Mm-hmm.
That it can't be a fishing expedition. We don't want law enforcement being able to dig into all of us with the thing that tells the government more about us than anything on the planet, which is our DNA, you know, without them having a warrant. It can't be the beginning of their investigation. It like go in with a little probable cause, get the warrant, say, all right, this is what we got. And just have the judge say, all right, I think that's sufficient. Go ahead, do what you're going to do with the IGG stuff. So, you know, if he's convicted, I think they'll go down the road. But in terms of being Ann Taylor sitting in it, you're going to have to do what most defense attorneys have to do at mm-hmm. a trial, and you're going to have to try to pick apart piece by piece everything that the state's going to be putting on in that case. You know, you got to look at it. You look at it globally, but the attack is piece by piece. You look at it like, all right, we got the touch DNA on the sheath. I think that all of us in this defense room, in terms of our team, would agree that that is probably the most damning piece of evidence they have. It's coming in. How do we attack it? You know, and then you formulate how you're going to attack it. And the easiest attack on touch DNA is it's super easy to leave touch DNA. So you're saying, okay, well, the transfer of touch DNA, we'll be able to establish that that's, you know, that's not real damning evidence. The question that we have to answer is, how did Brian Koberger's DNA end up on that sheath, even if it was easy to do, right? You know, mm-hmm. if it's not him being in that house, at what point was he close enough or in possession of that sheath that his DNA could have been on it, that it's explainable to a jury?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, to me, I you know, I hear people like, touch DNA, shit evidence. And it can be very, very challenging for the state to win a case strictly on touch DNA, depending on what the situation is. It's a case by case analysis with that stuff. You know, I mean, if you've got something where, you know, this knife sheath was bought at a Walmart and it was the floor model and 500 people have touched it, you know, and that's something that you're dealing with. You're like, well, this thing was out for public consumption. You can't trust that the person that they found the DNA from that person on that sheath, where it was accessible by so many people, that makes them the killer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, but when you have a situation where you got a single source DNA profile and it's found at the crime scene, it becomes more difficult to think of a way that yeah. may have happened where Brian Koberger didn't have that in his possession. So, like, I'm spending an awful lot of time, if I'm Ann Taylor, trying to craft a theory as to how that may have happened that's plausible to a jury.
And that's the thing. I mean, if you were to look at this, because the thing is, it's going to be a lot of the same arguments that they were making of what they wanted excluded from court, but now it's in court when the trial starts. And they can't be arguing, well, they shouldn't be in court to begin with anymore because it's been allowed in. So that's not going to be on the table, correct? She can't sit there and be correct. Like, well, we don't believe. Now she has to actually argue the merits of the touch DNA, which the science, it's pretty solid. I mean, I don't know where it's very questionable. It's not like this could possibly be someone else. Once they narrow it down and once they did get that statistical match, once they did do the warrant, once they swabbed Koberger, matched it to the touch DNA, I'm like, yep, that's him, because there's no more people in the world that could possibly it could be, because there's not that many people out there. We know it's his DNA on the knife sheath. That doesn't seem to be very much in question. Are they going to try and how could they try to say that? I mean, are they going to go down that road that it could be somebody else's DNA? Is that even a possibility? And then we'll get to the other situations of, well, it was the floor model at Kmart.
Right. Well, I mean, no, they're not, because yeah. And kind of what the state was saying in terms of the resistance to turning over the IgG data, it was that, look, we have Koberger's DNA and profile. Like, we're not introducing the IgG shit. We have a direct match from the sample that we got from Koberger, and that's what we matched to the profile on the sheath. Mm-hmm. So like the state was always saying, we're never bringing the IgG shit in because we don't need to. We don't need to go down the family tree thing because we got the dude's DNA.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, I mean, it's his DNA. Like mm-hmm. they can put an expert on to try to argue that it's not, but it's like that is the gold standard of evidence for juries.
Yeah.
So they are going, that's what I'm saying, man. Their biggest challenge right now is to come up with a plausible explanation that does not include Brian Koberger being in that house murdering those four people that night as to why his DNA ended up on that sheath.
Just like, I have to do this. It doesn't matter. They're not going to care. They're not going to notice. And just right over his head.
You gave that more thought than I think he did.
Yeah, probably did. Probably did.
I think he was just literally, he says, I have to do this. I'm going to do this. And he's just, I studied mm-hmm. it. I got to make sure I don't have my fingerprints on anything. Mm-hmm. Committed this crime. I got to, for a period of time, Manta, I think he's working in blocks of time that he thought were going to be appropriate. Mm-hmm. That's why he didn't turn his cell phone off from the time he thought of committing a murder. Like a year maybe prior to actually committing it, if he was doing it from that, if he was actually really, really thinking deeply, mm-hmm. again, let's assume it's him and yeah. he's not convicted yet, obviously. But if he, from the single point that he said, I need to do this to feel some of rush, this is what my plan is, from that point on is when he should actually start turning his cell phone off when he goes out for a drive, rather than in a time block like the night of it. Because yeah. now it's too obvious. He has to, in order to hide in plain sight, you actually have to create plain sight normal behavior over a large period of time. That was what is now granted. I feel like I'm giving instructions on every serial killer out there, but you got to establish periods of time. I only do this because literally,
yeah.
how do, when we're recruiting a spy, how does a spy hide in plain sight? They didn't go from zero to spying for us. They mm-hmm. went over a period of time. They established a pattern of behavior over years and decades of being able to have covert conversations with us that would look like they're not to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm kind of being a little coy there, but in these cases, I think if he was actually doing a good job, he would have been thinking longer term of establishing patterns of behavior. I mean, think of, you know, we're just talking about the Huerman case. Huerman established a pattern of behavior slowly escalating over a huge period of time, you know, all these other serial killers, but he's brand new, fresh, and he was thinking so compartmentalized right in here. That was thankfully for us and the investigators a flaw.
What do you think that drive was like all the way across the country with his dad? Obviously, they got pulled over twice. We saw some very concerned-looking Koberger at that moment in time. Dad was pretty much just chill, but we saw Brian. He was a little bit alarmed in those body cam videos. But what do you think that was like when the cops weren't there, when there wasn't that scary moment of, oh, my God, am I about to get caught? But just the two of them, you know, sitting there chatting, father, son, do you think it was a normal drive that they would have had before these crimes were allegedly committed by him? Or do you think there might have been something off in that drive that they'll be able to pull out of him in cross-examination?
That's a great question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, we don't have a lot of data points on before and after with Koberger. But you know, just on the few interactions we had from the dad and law enforcement, his dad's behavior looked pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, so he's used to his son's behavior being a little off throughout his entire life. He's used to his son's having a dark. So what we do know is his son has had, you know, Koberger's had dark times in his life before. So his dad's used to Koberger having darkness, having stress, having problems, and so that's a normal that his dad's been used to. Also, remember, Brian was actually going through some really tough times at the university where he's about to be kicked out of the PhD program. He had complaints filed against him. And so if Brian had an off behavior, that would actually account for that off behavior to the dad. So for the dad was helping maybe him talk about these problems he's having at the university, not realizing that that added stress he had or the problem solving behaviors that he knew he had to get into as a dad was actually triggered by murder and not being triggered by him having problems at the university. In other words, I think Brian was able to potentially hide that behavior in plain sight because he actually was having problems at the university already. So the dad just thought this was another problem with Brian. But in other words, the behaviors Brian's exhibiting was because of a murder or committing a murder. And the dad thought that same behavior might have been triggered by dealing with problems at the university.
It's like it's masking the fear with something else. Like, oh, well, it's just this. It's like my daughter made an interesting observation the other day when we were on a flight. She said, Dad, why are there so many horror movies that they give you to watch on your flights? If you like take the free entertainment thing. There's a lot of horror in there on any flights. And I'm like, that is interesting. And I kind of came to the conclusion of, well, you're basically diverting your fear. If you have a fear of flying, but maybe you like horror movies, you can push that fear over there where it's harmless. It's a movie. Nothing can happen of it, but you can still feel that fear, but know that there's something over here that it's not real at the end of the day. And then you're not focusing on your fear over here where, you know, not good odds, but there is a potential for something scary to happen. But when you divert it over there, it makes everything okay because you can just tell yourself it's just a movie, and then you land and you're not worried about the plane crashing. Same sort of thing.
It could be worse. It could be that.
Exactly. It could be that, but it's not. It's the movie. It's just diverting. Right. It's taking that emotion, that fear, that scariness of could my son have done this, and just rationalizing it away to, it's this. It's this over here because this makes rational sense because it's such a weird diversion from reality to think that your son would have killed four students. But at the same point, that's an interesting thing in this whole case. We see so many cases where people do absolutely horrific things and you still have the family standing behind them, not necessarily believing in their innocence, but standing behind them in a compassionate way, in a humanistic way of okay, this, yeah, they're not, there's something wrong here, but I'm going to stand behind that person because that's all they have right now. This case it seems a little different. It feels, and this is just my conjecture. I can't imagine the family's like, you know, chomping at the bit to get up there on the stand and testify against Brian. But if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, they certainly don't seem like they're all that opposed of being out there and doing what's right in a case like this and putting their, you know, familial emotions aside, those memories of Christmas morning when they were kids or whatever. You got to think there's some positive memories in this family. Or is there not? I mean, maybe Brian has just been a real thorn in everyone's side their whole life and no one can quite figure out what the hell is up with him. And they knew at some point it was going to come crashing down. And this happens to be the way it did.
I think this entire thing is devastating for the family.
Yeah.
You know, and from what I've read, you know, the dad, you know, Koberger's dad reaches out to the victims' families.
Yeah.
And gives his compassion there. I mean, and there were moments as a parent that there was greatness that they saw and relief and excitement, you know, when Brian graduated college and when he got accepted to the PhD program, when he overcame his drug addiction, when he got healthy, when he started losing weight. I mean, there's lots of moments as a dad that you've experienced with your own daughter, you know, that we have these moments that you hold on to regardless of anything. So, but at the same time, you know, the family, especially the dad, has exhibited the ability to be objective because he turned him into police when he's doing a drug addiction, you know, with drugs, you know. And so I think they're law abiding, but at the same time, they're compassionate. I think they're just parents that struggled with a really, really problem child doing the best they could with what they had is, again, my impression from it. I think they're going to be truthful.
Yeah.
With everything. I don't think they're going to try to paint anything. I think they're going to answer the questions as they're asked is the best way I can put it.
Do you think the prosecutors are going to need to take some steps ahead of time to really kind of help them learn how to separate the emotional memories that they have of their son from the factual testimony that they're going to give? If you were, you know, trying to advise them like, hey, you know, we appreciate you doing this. This is not easy. My God, I can't imagine the place you're in. How do you talk to that family to help them go through something like that?
I would do just like you said. I would, because of the way they've presented themselves already, I would just validate the fact that I see the pain you're in. I see how horrible this is. And, you know, let me know your tempo, your pace of what you need to be able to do this. But I'm with you. I'm compassionate for what you're going through. And just do it like that. Because I, you know, I think his parents and the sister, I think the family members are probably going to be one of the most damning things against Brian. And it's probably going to kill the parents of that, because I think they are going to be able to lay out these behavior patterns that are going to be very damning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to crush them to be able to do that. I mean, think about that. I mean, your testimony is probably what's going to potentially kill your son.
Yeah.
At the same time, they're struggling with the fact that his son took the life of four others. I mean, it's just such a, this is the most, this is horrendously devastating for them. And I think the prosecution from, again, the human beings we're seeing good human beings trying to do good things for others and right wrongs, or at least bring justice to the wrongs. And it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a big challenge.
One more complete conjecture question. It's a piece of evidence that we know exists. We don't know what's in it as of yet. It's the note to dad that was found in his apartment. And that's all we know it was called, note to dad. Could be nothing. I mean, it could literally be like a note that he wanted to give his dad when he was going to pick him up and remind him to, you know, pick up more milk or something. Who knows? Or, you know, if we're looking a little bit darker here, it was left in the apartment. It wasn't something that he brought along with him when his dad picked him up. It was there almost, if it is what we think it is, a note that he could get to his dad. Investigators would find it eventually if he were to be caught down the road. I mean, that almost, that shows, if it is that Koberger was thinking he might get caught and maybe there's some words that he wanted to say to his dad. If it's that, what do you think is in that note?
You know, I think the note just says how much he loves his dad and appreciates him.
Yeah.
I think it's really simple. I don't think Koberger is going to leave anything that incriminated himself. But I think he wanted something to let his dad know that he sees what his dad has done for him his entire life.
Yeah. It shows a little bit of humanity in a character that otherwise doesn't seem to have a whole lot of it. It's interesting. Yeah, you know, they can kind of weave in and out at times.
He struggled with it. You know, we saw from his earlier writings and blog postings that we think were his. I mean, he wanted to do right. He wanted to be a better person. He kept taking steps to do that. And his evil side just got a hold of him. Mm-hmm. I literally think it's what it was. He struggled with it. And I think everyone around him struggled with it. And unfortunately, four beautiful young lives were destroyed, as well as the families, because he couldn't overcome and made some really, really horrendous choices with the evil inside of him.
Well, another big piece that they were trying to argue that they shouldn't be looking at, which tells me there's probably something there, is the Amazon search history. And there was a couple other search histories as well and purchase histories. One would start to wonder, okay, we're going after Amazon. We don't want to see this purchase history. Why would that be? Like, what's on that purchase history? And if we end up seeing a K-bar knife and sheath on there, is it kind of case over?
Look, the best argument for the defense in that scenario is that they don't have the weapon. You know, so that
they have the sheath, though. I mean, they don't have the weapon.
I get it.
But you got the sheath. And if the sheath matches up to the same one that would have come with that model again, just because I don't believe we have that, do we? We don't have a purchase history stating he bought a Kobar knife, correct?
Well, we don't know.
We don't know yet. It's just nothing that's come out there. I know that's been speculated on.
Well, Coffendaffer flat out said it on the Dateline thing that somebody leaked it to her.
Mm-hmm.
That the search history is showing that he bought it on Amazon.
That's where we've heard it. It's an allegation at this moment.
Still. Correct. It was on Dateline, and I'm like, whoa, like that's big. Like somebody broke the gag. To me, that's game over.
Yeah.
If you've got him buying it on the Amazon, on Amazon, and it's like as soon as I heard about the K-bar and the sheath, I mean, I went on Google immediately. Mm-hmm. I found the exact same sheath and K-bar knife, and it's a set. It's got the Marine Corps logo on it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the exact same thing. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I mean, this is not it. Cause I was like, all right, well, is this something that's like issued by the Marines or, you know, like going into the search, I'm like, you know, is this like a difficult thing to get your hands on? And it's not.
No.
The question then becomes this guy who's getting his whatever, I think he was getting his PhD in criminology, right? Is that what he was doing? How fucking stupid do you need to be? You know, you're going to go and commit these fucking horrific murders. You know, you're a criminology guy and you're going to leave a paper trail with Amazon.
Yeah.
That you bought the fucking knife, I guess you'd have to think, well, certainly he didn't anticipate that he'd be stupid enough to accidentally leave the sheath at the crime scene.
Yes.
What I mean? He's like thinking, all right, I'm going to buy this thing. There's not going to be any trace of it. They're never going to get to me.
And that's where I think Koberger's narcissism would come into play, where it's like, I could never, fail this. I could never be, something could not go wrong. This is going to go smoothly. I believe it is because I'm so detailed and da da da. And that's where the idiocy comes in, where it's, no, you're not that smart. You may think you are. You think you're better than everybody else in the room. You think you can talk to people this way or treat people this way. This is the pattern that we've seen in him. And it's like, oh, well, this explains that. He thought he was going to be able to get away with this and there'd be no worry for looking at that search history. Where I believe he's a very smart guy in some areas, but then when it comes to like social constructs, I don't think he has any freaking clue there.
Oh my God. He's got no ability to be able to operate in society mm-hmm. as a normal person.
No.
Like, I mean, that's just evident. Like, you know, from the interviews you've heard of people that have had, any kind of interactions with them, whether it be girls that went on a Tinder date with her or students that were in his class, who's like, he's a fucking weirdo. And he's mean. And, all the things you hear about him are just like the guy just did not know how to function like a normal human being when he's around other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, and that's kind of like adds up, right?
It makes sense.
You hear the white snow thing, that thing that he wrote up talking about this thing he has. I'm like, This guy kind of sounds like the dude.
In his mind, he thinks he's being under the radar on so many of these things, but it's so obvious to anyone that he's not. And that's the problem. But that's a problem with a lot of folks that are like that, that are not murderers. You can just tell, like, they, you know, think you're kind of being the, but you're not. I mean, everyone can tell what's going on here. And that's where I think it all falls apart for Koberger. So you have the DNA is staying in, the cell phone tracking data is staying in. Pretty much everything is staying in. Nothing is going out. So now they're going to have to try and argue all of these points. I get, you know, going to try and argue the floor model, maybe. I mean, I guess, but if you got it on your Amazon receipts, that doesn't go very far for you. You know, it's just, where do you go? I mean, can you argue the cell data, the pinging of it? I know it's like, yes, there's multiple towers, and yes, it does cover a certain distance. People will be surprised how small of a distance each tower actually covers. I think if you really look at it, you got that. God knows what else they have on the digital footprint. I'm assuming they're going to have some GPS information from his phone as well that will probably further corroborate the pinging as far as more of an exact location as to where he was at, other than when the phone's off. What do you got here? I mean, what else do they have to try and argue this other than he likes to look at the stars?
Yeah, I like, in terms of the night of, I, you know, remember, they put forth that they've got an alibi. Right?
Yeah, he likes to look at the stars.
Right, he's a big stargazer guy. He takes those late night creepy drives out there because that's what he likes to do. And you know, so like, I'm assuming the night of, and if I'm like, if I'm Koberger and I'm like kind of trying to create this narrative leading up to me doing this thing, you know, like for months leading up to it, I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to go out and drive. I'm going to establish that I do this. It's my habit. I enjoy it. I get to think. I like being alone. There's nobody driving, you know, whatever, you know, if I'm Koberger, I'm driving out to this forested area and I'm fucking leaving my phone there, like literally so that it tracks while I'm there. So that it, like, if a signal can pick it up, it'll pick it up as me being in that area at the time that the state thinks the murders took place. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then I'm driving to the area doing the deed. You know, and then I'm leaving, you know, and it's like, and then I'm going and scooping my phone, and then it's back on the grid. And, you know, so like, I don't know that the night of phone data is going to be as powerful as the state thinks it's going to be, depending on what they have. And again, I have no fucking clue what they have other than what we've heard. You know, I think that it's really powerful circumstantial evidence, the 12 occasions that he happened to be creeping around that residence. I think it's powerful evidence if they are able to put him around King Road the following morning after his stupid ass remembered or figured out that he forgot the fucking sheath. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh my God, like I gotta drive up. Like, cause I, like, my hypothesis on that was, okay, he realized at some point he didn't have the sheath anymore during the course of the night over the next few hours.
Yeah.
I don't have the sheath. You know, like can you imagine that realization at that moment? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he like clearly didn't, if it's him, he didn't realize it when he's walking out of the place. Like, he just, like, it's your mind's going a million miles an hour. You've just committed four horrific murders. Like, if he's the sick fuck that we think that he might be, like, he's probably exhilarated. You know, he's not thinking of it in a way that a normal person would be like, oh my God, what did I do? He's probably walking around with a raging heart on like a fucking freak. And, you know, I mean, who knows what's going on in his head? Whatever it is, it's not making sure that he's got all his shit with him.
No.
You know, so when he figures that out. So, I mean, in my estimation, you know, I mean, there's two arguments you can make. You could be like, oh, he's that guy that creeps by the crime scene just to relive it, and because he wants to see what's going on over there. You know, you hear about killers doing that a lot. Or he's hoping that the girl that was still in there that may have seen him, and I don't know if he saw her back. It would seem like he would have had to. that she's sleeping. And if law enforcement's not there, do I creep back in to get that fucking thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would have to really, really be contemplating getting back in that house to go get that goddamn thing if you left it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're like everything that you planned, everything that you did in terms of preparing for this night has been shot to shit mm-hmm. because you left that sheath in there. So no one's ever going to convince me that he wasn't there contemplating getting back into that house to go grab that thing.
Sure.
So like, to me, that's very powerful evidence. You know, like, I mean, depending on what the exact story is behind the, you know, what the alibi is, you know, I mean, like, I mean, look, the defense is going to have things to argue. You know, we know that there were two other male blood DNA sources that were found at the house. We got the one on the railing. We got the one in the glove. You know, I mean, those can be powerful pieces of evidence for the defense to try to sow reasonable doubt. You know, I mean,
no, when they got nothing else, I mean, I don't think they're super powerful when you really look at them in context, but it's something.
It's something. I mean, you know, I mean, you, like, obviously the counter argument to that, you know, is that it's a party house.
Dude. Yeah.
You know, it's like some dude who just blasted a rail of blow and does way too much of it, got a bloody nose when he was.
Or you have a hangnail and you're holding onto a railing, or you, again, you have a hangnail, or you have a cut on your fingers, which any of us do at any given time, usually, and you put on a glove and that glove has your DNA in it. Or just go, I mean, you know what it's like. You live in Chicago. You go walking around anytime in winter, go for a block, you're going to find three gloves and a hat on the road or on the sidewalk just because people drop that shit. So it's not like, ooh, a glove.
Like, right. So, yeah. I mean, like, that's what they could be the pushback from the state on that. You know, like, I mean, look, it's a college house. There's a lot of people in and out of it. It is flat out a party house.
Yeah.
Like, that is established. And it is cold as fuck in Idaho in the winter, mm-hmm. and every single human being wears gloves. So, you know, depending on the amount of blood, if we're talking about, like it all boils down to, like, we're hearing, like, broad strokes of what the evidence is. You know, I mean, like, to say we don't know, the only thing that I'll say about the sheath DNA is at this point, I mean, we know that Othram did it, and Othram's a phenomenal lab, is that we don't know the quality of it, right? We know that it's there. We know that the state is claiming that their lab has made the match. I mean, they're going to attack the match. Mm-hmm. They're going to say it's a shit sample, that there's not enough matches on the loci for it to be, it shouldn't even be admissible in court. It's like, it's just shit DNA sample. I mean, I imagine that's where it's gonna.
Well, they use that technical term. It's a shit sample, Your Honor.
Right.
This is just a shit sample.
Hey, man, they've gotten a lot more lax these days in courtrooms. You hear more F-bombs in courtrooms. You know, always under the guise that this is what somebody said, than you ever used to.
It's like, Your Honor, Mr. Leahy here says it's a shit sample.
Hey, everything that guy just said is fucking bullshit. So it's, you know, I mean, look, man, you got to pick it apart one piece at a time. And, you know, I mean, she's mounting a defense. She's going to have witnesses on. You know, I mean, do you call Koberger? Not a fucking chance. You put that guy on there? No way.
Do you put him on at the last minute if you know it's doomed?
Look, it's a death penalty case. There's zero, I always try to explain to people, I mean, there's absolutely zero chance he's pleading out because you have nothing to lose by going to trial on a death penalty case. I mean, they're offering you nothing and your fate is death.
Yeah.
So you're going to try to fight it. You know, there's zero chance he's ever pleading out. And, you know, I mean, he could, like, he's certainly appears to be a narcissistic guy. Absolutely could be like a mini Murdoch and think that he's going to be able to go out there and Svengoolie the shit out of it and and convince these jurors that it wasn't him. You know, like I'm an unusual guy. I enjoy evening drives.
Do you use that to your advantage? Do you put him on the stand and then trigger him? Like, look at these hot women. None of these women will ever sleep with you. And then just get his reaction. just
get like a smoke show prosecutor, you know, to like really get him like worked up on the stand, you know, do some kind of some trickery. I mean, we kid, but you know, it's a tough case for the defense. It is.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, like thinking he's not the guy, and you have to wait until trial. There is no question about it. The evidence, we have not seen it vetted.
Nope.
You know, I am a defense attorney and through and through, and he is alleged to have done this. He is presumed innocent at this point, and we have to vet all the evidence. It's just, you know, like any human being, when you move yourself out of the attorney role, which is impossible to do, but you're looking at it just when I look at Richard Allen probable cause affidavit and what they had and the evidence that they had, and I compare it to what they appear to have against Koberger. One leaned innocent to me, one leaned guilty. When I look at Huerman, fucking thing leans guilty as shit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like they, you know, you can tell when law enforcement's done the job. And look, the law enforcement's going to get peppered in the Koberger case. They're going to get hammered. You know, you hear about all kinds of shit they fucked up and did wrong. And you're going to hear about all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is any of that going to overcome the fact that he left a sheath with his DNA under one of the bodies of the girls? It's, to me, that's the beginning, the middle, and the end of the case. Like, it's going to be really, really tough to get over that. I don't care what the argument is. And I'm not saying it from a perspective of anything other than I know the impact that that kind of evidence has on juries.
Yeah.
Period.
And it's certainly going to have its impact.
Indeed.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists, all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NoCD.com.
Tired of scrolling through endless sitter profiles on other sites only to get ghosted? For over 20 years, Sitter City has been the go-to resource for parents who want a more personalized, reliable way to find trustworthy sitters and nannies. While other sites flood you with options, Sitter City focuses on bringing you high-quality matches that are the right fit for your family every time. With SitterCity.com, you can find full-time, part-time, or occasional care that meets your specific needs. Every caregiver is ID verified and profiles include real parent reviews, background checks, and specialized experience, so you can spend less time searching and more time doing what matters most, spending time with your family. And did you know that many employers include Sitter City as part of their benefits package? In a few clicks, find out if you can get Sitter City free. Getting started has never been easier. Take the guesswork out of finding care so you can breathe easier knowing your kids are in good hands. Visit SitterCity.com today to get the care you need.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.